freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 435 of Gun Freedom Radio, where we engage, we educate, and we inform. We are brought to you by azfirearmsauctions.com, where you set the price on guns, ammo, and accessories. I am one of your hosts, Cheryl Todd.
And I'm the other guy, Dan Todd. Our theme today is a generation bridge. And our guest is Eric Hayes. Eric is a Turning Point Action Field Representative overseeing Western Arizona and the Phoenix West Valley area. He started his political journey at the age of 16 as an influencer. Wow, 16.
No.
He is a precinct councilman and
committeeman.
And at just 19 years old, he ran the field for Turning Point Action in Maricopa County during the 2022 election cycle. Eric considers himself a bridge for the everyday American and the people in politics. And I'm thinking, Eric, bridge, we need freeways, man, because the younger generation could care less about politics.
As a general rule, but welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you very much for having me. This is wonderful. Cheryl, I know that we've, you know, known each other for quite some time. And so I'm very thrilled and very happy to finally be on the show with you guys. This is awesome.
I know. I was, when I first met you, I was just struck with your, I hate to keep harping on the age thing, but I was struck by how young you were, but yet how informed, how poised, how serious you were about the issues and the values that matter to you. And it just really, it drew me to you, and it made me very curious about what is your journey? What is your story? You are still quite young. Not yet 21, I think.
No, not yet. I'll be 21 in June.
So, and already in the shooting sports for many years and all of that. So just kind of talk us through, you know, what is your journey? Because so often we hear about the generation gap. You know, we're sitting here being grandparents. You're not yet 21, and you know, you are excited and engaged in being a bridge between those things, and then also that whole political realm that seems like it's out there somewhere for too many people. And you're saying, no, look, I can help connect these dots for you. So how did all that start?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up on a shooting range. I've been a competitive shooter for pretty much most of my life. I mean, my father was a firearms instructor for the sheriff's office. He was in the Marine Corps before that. And so, I mean, naturally, we just kind of grew up at the shooting range, doing it competitively, doing high power shooting. And so that's kind of, in a way, like where it started. I mean, I came up conservative, right? And that's just the way that I was raised. Where my interest in politics came in is kind of the government's fault, if I'm being honest with you. You know, I started to see a lot of issues with the education system, you know, going back a long time ago. You know, the way that I was raised is you judge people based upon the content of their character and nothing else, right? I mean, if you're, you know, not a good person, you're not a good person. But if you treat people with respect, and, you know, you say, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. And, you know, that's how I was raised. And I saw things in the education system really early on that didn't match up with that. Like I said, I grew up conservative, and I saw things in the education system, like things that they're teaching in history class that didn't sit right with me, things that confused me big time. One of those things in particular is, they're talking about something called the party switch. I don't know if you guys have heard of this before.
I have not.
Yes. But go ahead, because many people haven't.
Yeah. So you can look at some point in history and say that, yes, there was a party switch, but it's not the same party switch that they're talking about in the education system. What they're saying is somewhere in history, Republicans and Democrats just completely switched sides. And it was, you know, Republicans that were slave owners and Republicans that put Jim Crow laws in. And, you know, it was Democrats who put in the Emancipation Proclamation. And it was, you know, Democrats who were the champions of the civil rights era. And like, that's just not true. Right. I mean, that's not true at all. And so I saw this and I began to question things. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me because, I mean, I was raised very conservatively and both my parents were, you know, registered Republicans. And, you know, seeing that, I'm thinking, I'm like, why would we support a party that has like this evil past? And then I realized that that's not true. Like, none of that information was true. Nothing that they were teaching in history was true. And now it's gotten way worse since I've been in. I mean, now they're like letting like biological men use the women's restroom. And, you know, I mean, they've just taken morality and God out of the education system entirely. And that's where you get kind of this decline. I saw a stat the other day that said that only 36% of Generation Z considers themselves a believer in Christ. Wow. And, you know, it was mind-boggling to me. There was an article that New York Post came out with last year that says that that number is growing. I don't know. I can't really speak to that. But they did say the number is growing. They said that, you know, right before COVID, it was like a quarter. And now it's like, you know, a third or whatever. I don't know. But either way, that doesn't stop the fact that only 36% of Generation Z are believers. And so I'm kind of seeing this trend in what the education system is doing and what the government is doing. Mm-hmm. So going up to high school, I was big into baseball. I paid attention to politics a little bit. I cared as much as, you know, you can at that age. But I didn't want to do this, right? I mean, I wanted to have some sort of career in baseball, whether that was playing or coaching or, you know, being an analyst, whatever it was, that's what I wanted to do. And as I went into, high school, you know, and COVID broke out, I left and I went online. I'm like, I'm not doing this. And I saw that everything was shut down. And I'm like, the government is doing this. You know, I mean, it's pretty despicable if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I have to get involved. My first ever political event was a Trump rally in February of 2020. So it was right before COVID broke out. And I kind of got my calling there to do something in politics, but I wasn't quite sure. And then once everything shut down, I'm like, okay. You know, it's time to do something. So as the election kind of goes, I start doing some social media stuff, doing interviews with candidates and all this stuff. And then after the election, I kind of sat back and I'm like, you know, I felt like all I did was share memes online. Like, I didn't really do anything. And so I decided to change that. I got involved behind the scenes and, you know, in the grassroots. And then Turning Point Action picked me up pretty much right when I graduated high school and had the honor to basically run Maricopa County, run the field program for Maricopa County. And this is hilarious because, you know, growing up in the West Valley, those of you that know the Valley, you know, it's really like seven different states, right? Like, you know, you have like Surprise and like that looks completely different than like Glendale and Peoria. And then like East Mesa and West Mesa look completely different. And so I'm organizing these Super Saturday rallies for Kerry Lake and Blake Masters, and, you know, who were our endorsed candidates at the time. And I'm organizing them in like Mesa and Chandler and Gilbert. I know nothing about these places. And so I'm just like, I'm trying to find all these like people to come out to our Super Saturdays and knock doors for, you know, an hour or so. So it was a really interesting time. So that's kind of how it started. You know, and then it kind of just turned into sort of politics has just kind of turned into a love-hate relationship from there. But, you know, I talked to so many people, you know, I mean, pretty much all my family and all my friends, they're very blue collar. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of the sore thumb sticking out that works in politics. And I hear them all the time and they talk about all of these different issues, like the economy, like, you know, we can't afford, you know, anything. I mean, you can be a machinist, you know, making $80,000 a year and you can't afford anything. You have to have 2, 3, 4 roommates. You know, if you don't want to live in a bad area, you know, groceries. I mean, you look at where gas is, you look at where groceries are, you know, I mean, personally, it costs me $100 a month or a week, right? In groceries. That used to be like 50.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of seeing this shift, and, you know, it's about being just a regular, normal person. So when I talk to candidates, I'm like, mm-hmm. hey, this is what people that aren't as politically active, aren't as politically involved, this is what they're saying. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear all of this other stuff, but what are you going to do about, you know, the economy and protecting our Second Amendment rights? And what are you going to do about restoring faith in our country and faith in our elections? What are you going to do about it? You know, and I only say those things because, yeah, do I agree with a lot of these people? 100%. But it's about being like a representative, and I'm not running for office or anything, but I feel that it's important because this is how it should be. You know, we should have normal people jumping in, listening to everyday people and saying, what are your thoughts? What do you feel about this? And being able to really put that on other people, you know, on these candidates and on these elected officials.
Absolutely.
So Eric, how, you know, these people that you're talking to that, you know, they say food's too high, gas is too high, all that, you know, you talk to them about it and they say, yeah, you know, we should do something, but they don't do anything. They're just sitting there. We're seeing that everywhere, especially the younger generation. They're fed with so much crap. How do you reach them? What was the magic thing that you did to change so that people would do something?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I can tell you it's disheartening when we have elected officials that are sending billions of dollars to countries that wouldn't do the same for us. When we have an invasion on our own southern border and, you know, they're sending money to somebody else's border. And it's very disheartening when you see that, you know, it's very frustrating. What I would say is you have to really get them thinking, really get them talking, and kind of emotional about the subject, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you can get somebody to become emotional, there's a passion there, right? That's what it's about. It's about really finding the passion. And, you know, you can't just go in and talk about things that somebody, for instance, in Generation Z, like doesn't really care about. Like just being honest with you, you know, you have to focus on the economy. Generation Z is one of the most entrepreneurial generations that we've seen in a very long time. This is something that a lot of people don't know. So they love to hear about the economy. You know, they love to hear about those kind of things. So when you can talk about that, you suddenly are kind of igniting a passion. A good buddy of mine, who started out as, you know, a little bit more liberal, he told me, he goes, you know what, like I'm more on the left side, but I'm very capitalist. And then as time went on, he becomes more and more conservative. And now he's one of the most conservative people that I know.
Right.
And you know, it's because he's like, the economy was kind of the turning point because I saw all of the things that were happening with the economy. And then that got me looking into, why is this? Okay, well, the invasion on our border, the fact that they're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, the fact that, you know, like clearly they don't really care about us. And there is a political establishment and there is like a uniparty, right? So suddenly he's kind of starting to see these things like develop and I'm watching it in him and I'm like, dude, go, go, go. Right. You know, and now, like I said, he's one of the most conservative people that I know. So it's starting where a lot of the people in this generation, what they care about, and no better way to understand that than somebody that's from the generation.
But what about the hardest thing that we have to deal with right now is the younger generation, all the free stuff they think they're getting. It's not mm-hmm. free, but they think it's free. Mm-hmm. Oh, is Trump going to take our college debt away? No. Mm-hmm. And that is the dangerous thing because they don't realize it's not free. And somebody's paying for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, how the young generation, they want the free stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they want the handouts. I mean, I completely agree with you. You know, and this all goes back to this, and it's the statistic that I said a little bit ago, where we have this godless society where, yeah, everything they want handed to them for free. And it's funny because I hear about it from kind of both sides. right? Both from a little bit of the older generation and my generation. You know, I hear they don't want to work and, you know, they're lazy and they just want everything handed to them. And there's a sense of entitlement, which frankly is like kind of true. I mean, not for all, but for a majority of the generation. You look at like some of these people at like, for instance, NAU, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys saw a few months back, but Charlie Kirk did a prove me wrong thing at NAU, and there was like riots happening on the school grounds. I mean, it was horrible. It was insane. You know, but kind of going back to that is you're kind of having a decay of society when only 36% of them are believers, right, when only 36% of them are Christian. You know, you're going to have these issues. And so really what we need is we need to bring God back to this generation. We need people, you know, I mean, we really kind of need a restoration of faith. Mm-hmm. The reality is this. It's so entitled. And this is interesting. I heard my mom say this, where it's like, well, my generation just kind of left, you know, was very strict with us. You know, my parents' generation was very strict with us. And so then, you know, the kind of like Gen X, right, which is mostly the parents of Gen Z, were so lax and just like let them do whatever the heck they want to. You know, but there's a cycle, right? I mean, there's a cycle, you know, you guys have probably heard this before, where it's, you know, tough times, you know, create strong men create easy times, which creates weak men. And I think that we're kind of in that weak man period, but we're starting to see a little bit of it. We're starting to see that kind of close in a little bit, because there's another interesting statistic. 75% of Generation Z 18-year-old men are like registering as like Republicans and are voting conservative. Yeah. So there's another statistic for you. I think people are fed up. You know, they're starting to kind of come to the light. They're starting to see, you know, a lot of the issues that are happening. People that I know, you know, didn't really care about this kind of stuff, you know, now they're, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, you know, 22, 23 years old. And they're like, you know, I didn't really care, but like now I have to pay $4.50 for gas. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that, right? Like, you know, I don't really care, but now my rent, you know, is $2,000 a month, right?
Crazy.
And it's crazy. You know, my groceries are high. So now they're starting to kind of come to light a little bit with it and realize, yeah, I'm a little bit more conservative than I thought. And they think that, you know, they're going to have that idea of free healthcare and free college and all this stuff until the government comes in and is taking half their paycheck away from them.
Yeah.
You know,
cover all that right. free stuff. Yeah,
exactly. It's
really not free. Well, I mean, there is a hopeful message in what you're saying, and I am kind of holding on to that hope. Mm-hmm. You know, and I find that we are talking a lot in this conversation about, you know, the political left, the political right, you know, faith-based things. And, you know, I always like when we start leaning into that, I like to reset for my audience to say that, you know, we are not a political show. And the reason is because the Second Amendment is completely nonpartisan, right? Mm. All of these things that we're talking about are completely nonpartisan. The Bill of Rights was written for everyone. Mm-hmm. And somehow here we are, that in order to support faith-based things, in order to support value-based things, in order to support the Second Amendment, suddenly we have to start talking about political sides and political candidates. What the heck? How did this even happen? This is exactly why our founders put these guardrails in place, and exactly why our very first president was not in favor of this two-party situation, because he could see that it would either be extremely divisive or it would kind of geel into this uniparty situation that we're finding ourselves in. And I'm hoping that that next generation that understands the joy and the challenges of entrepreneurship, because we've been self-employed our entire marriage. We'll be married 39 years.
Wow.
This month. Oh,
wow.
Did I just say that out loud?
That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. But I'm hoping that next generation that is valuing those kinds of things maybe we'll start separating back out. Okay, the Bill of Rights, let's leave that alone. Let's leave free speech alone. Let's leave the Second Amendment alone, you know, all that kind of stuff. But one of the first things you said in this interview is that it's kind of the government's fault. Their overreach is why you are speaking up. That's exactly our story. We were just business owners. And then we opened a gun shop. It was about 2 years into, or we were about 2 years old when Obama was elected the first time. And then suddenly we were being called the purveyors of death on TV every night. And I was like, somebody's got to tell the truth about why we value these rights and these tools. And I said, well, you know, usually somebody is looking back at you in the mirror. And that's kind of how we started. So I'm hoping that, you know, the upside of all this overreach and all this craziness going on in our nation is going to awaken more people like you and I. And the other thing we've talked about a lot is the Turning Point, Charlie Kirk, Turning Point Action. Just lay it out there for folks that, you know, maybe those are words they're sort of familiar with or not at all. What are we talking about? What is that organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So Turning Point Action originally started as Students for Trump. And that was back in 2019, 2020. Trump basically came to Charlie and said, hey, you need a 501c4. So Turning Point USA, which is probably, I mean, it's the largest conservative organization in the entire country, arguably. And Charlie started, Charlie Kirk started it back in 2012. I believe. And he basically started this educational thing that was on high school and college campuses talking about Constitution and free markets and capitalism and whatnot. And Trump basically came to Charlie and said, hey, you need a political version of this because they're a 501c3. So they can't really engage in political activity. So then we started Students for Trump. After the election, it turned into Turning Point Action. And that's kind of where we're at. So we're the 501c4 version of Turning Point Action. We do all, or of Turning Point, sorry. We do all the political stuff, you know, the endorsements of candidates, you know, registering voters, recruiting precinct committee men. And one of the things that I'm really excited about is we're actually doing something. It's our Chase the Vote program. And it's the largest ballot chasing operation of any conservative organization of anybody on the right that has ever done. So, I mean, we're hiring people all over the place, you know, in our swing states, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, you know, and I mean, I can really only speak to Arizona because that's kind of my, you know, that's my territory. You know, so we're hiring people to do this. And we're also building up coalitions. And what these coalitions do is we recognized a massive thing that nearly 300,000 Republicans did not show up in 2022.
What is that about? What crazy. Is that about?
They're all disenfranchised, right? Sometimes maybe they kind of stop caring or they feel like their vote doesn't matter. And so why vote? And so we kind of recognize this. And then we looked into, is there a specific, I guess, pattern of certain individuals who aren't showing up? And there is. So, you know, we have a number of coalitions, but I can tell you the main ones out in the West Valley and kind of Western Arizona is moms. They're the number one. They're the number one demographic that isn't voting. It's Latinos and it's Christians. So once again, we're falling into this like whole thing. Nearly 50% of Christians didn't show up in 2022. Huh. They didn't show up to vote. So we're building on a faith coalition. You know, kind of out in more of the rural parts, we have our Farmers and Ranchers Coalition. This is like a massive problem. I mean, yes. Once again, you know, I consider myself, you know, obviously a person of faith. And I mean, considering the fact that nearly 50% of other believers aren't voting mm-hmm. is crazy to me. And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, I think number one, it's, you know, you could say, well, yeah, the church isn't standing up. They're not standing on biblical values. You know, and that's a big part of it. I think the other aspect of it too, and I've heard this is, God wins in the end. So why should we care? Which is like, okay, God does win in the end, but if you go through different parts of the Bible, Hosea chapter 8, verse 4 is a perfect example of this, where it says, they set kings without my consent, princes without my authority, and with their silver and gold, they make idols of themselves to their own destruction, right? Or Proverbs chapter 29, verse 2, or Proverbs chapter 28, verse 12 is another one. You can kind of go through different parts of the Bible. You can look at the fall of Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar, all of these things. Like, didn't the crucifixion of Jesus kind of like paint the way of, hey, this is what happens when governing authorities are corrupt. This is what happens when governing authorities like suck, right? The reality is that we have to reach out to these people, and we have to basically show them like, hey, this is why it's important, right? So it makes sense for me as a Christian to go and knock on the door and chase the ballot of somebody who's another Christian. It doesn't make any sense for me to go and chase somebody's ballot or knock on somebody's door as a mom. Clearly, I have a beard. I don't believe in the 76 gender thing. You know, I don't believe that you can have a beard as a female, right? I mean, you know, it's pretty clear. People are more than welcome to assume my gender. That's completely fine with me. You know, but the thing is, you know, we have to start reaching out to these people. These are people that it's not like they got a flat tire or they got sick on election day and couldn't show up. These are people that are regularly skipping it. You know, and they fall into this category called low propensity. So every voter is weighed on a scale out of four. Okay. So if you voted, say that you're a four out of four, that means you voted four out of the last four elections. You're already showing up. We don't need to bug you. We don't need to bother you. Mm-hmm. If you're a one out of four or a two out of four, you fall into the category of low propensity, which means that you haven't showed up. Some of these people haven't showed up since like 2014, 2016.
Wow.
And so we need to really, we need to really educate them on that. We need to educate and start really pushing to get these people to show up and vote.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but as you're knocking on doors and you're talking to fellow Christians who have been sitting, you know, on the bench, what are you starting to see light bulbs come on? Are you starting to see some motivation, to impart some motivation? How is that going?
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, I've talked to people where they're like, you know, I haven't really considered any of those things that you talked about. When you start arguing with the Bible to Christians and you say, hey, look, the Bible says this, right? They can't argue that, right? Because, you know, the word is the word. You know, it doesn't matter what the denomination is the word, right? And so when you start really just saying, hey, this is what it says word for word, line by line, you know, this isn't my context, this is what it means, right? We start to see that. So with our faith coalition, we did this during Easter. We did a showing of the Passion of the Christ throughout the entire state. So we did one, I did one up in Lake Havasu. We had a lot of people there, and then one at Harkins Arrowhead in Peoria out in the West Valley. We had one in Scottsdale and Queen Creek and some churches and whatnot that we did it at. And, you know, I had people texting me saying that it was completely life-changing.
Wow.
They're like, you know, I was lukewarm in faith before I saw this, and it completely sparked something in me that I had never thought about before. And
goosebumps. That's fantastic.
I know. I had goosebumps. And to hear that is so powerful. And it shows that our faith coalition, it's not just getting people to vote and trying to save our country. It's like saving souls, which is so awesome to watch. I mean, it's a beautiful, wonderful thing that's happening. So yeah, I mean, I'm talking to people. We're talking to people. We're building relationships out in the neighborhoods and out in the precincts. And it's like, it's so awesome to see it, you know, how much it's growing. And yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. President Trump said that November 5th would be Christian Visibility Day when he becomes president. And I'm like, you know what? Like, let's go for it. You know,
that's fantastic.
You know, I know the challenges of, you know, I do a state. So I go to people's houses, and a lot of them are the old, you know, older generation. And it's interesting because you walk in the house, they've got CNN on or something like that, and you get talking to them, and they are like robots. They're fed so much that I will vote for Biden. Biden is my hero.
Trump
and
is evil.
It's like, and Trump is evil. And it's like, you can't get through those people because their TVs and their friends that they deal with, all they do is talk about how wonderful life is right now. But I do think that we have a chance here because they're buying the gas at $4.20 a gallon. Mm-hmm. They're buying the food at double prices, whatever. And they're starting to think the picture's not right, mm-hmm. you know, but I try to talk to every client I go to just to kind of see where they're at. I don't try to talk them out of anything or change their ways, but I just kind of want to know what they think and try to have a good conversation, not trying to force it down their throat, but try to understand where they're coming from. I can't get it. Most of them, you can't get it. They're blocked. They're hypnotized, I guess is the word to say.
Well, but I'll weigh in on that and say that, you know, we, for the last couple of years, we had closed our retail gun shop. We still sell firearms through our auction house, Pot of Gold Auctions. But we were open during the COVID mess. We were open during all the riots, all the defund the police. And we had lines out the door around our little corner shop out here in the West Valley of Phoenix area. And the vast majority of the people who were in line were people that were kind of having an out-of-body experience saying, I cannot believe that I am about to purchase this tool. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they came to our store is because of our demeanor, because of these kinds of conversations, right? Because we're not, you know, ever browbeating anybody or forcing them to believe what we believe. And they felt like they could just trust us to serve their needs. And so I think those kinds of things go so much farther than what we think they do. And when Charlie Kirk shows up and does his, was it Ask It Me Anything? What was it called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Prove Me Wrong.
Prove Me Wrong Tour, yeah.
Yeah.
He does such a good job with that because the people that are approaching him are trying to purposely be provocative, purposely mm-hmm. try to get under his skin, purposely try to get to see him lose his cool.
Yeah.
And he consistently just, you know, takes it out of this messy emotional place, moves it up into the headspace, but then somehow still manages to connect with what they're feeling, right? Mm-hmm. It's brilliant and it's subtle. And I think that that is ultimately how in the long run, people with our values will win. And so I applaud both of you for doing that kind of work. I have never done door knocking. The whole idea intimidates me beyond belief and I am a people person. I just don't know that I could do that. And then to see someone like yourself, not even 21 years old, being so bold and so brave and so forthright to not go out there to, you know, force anybody to do anything, but to actually open an opportunity. Here's this amazing gift we have that we get to choose our government. We get to hire our leaders with our vote. And, you know, welcome in. Come on, be part of that. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead. Did you have something to say to that?
No. Go ahead. Yeah.
So the next topic I wanted to cover is kind of encompassing a little bit of all of that. The idea of individual liberties, the idea of our Bill of Rights, our Second Amendment. In your experience, how are those things viewed these days? I originally was going to ask you about your generation, but now knowing that you're out there, you know, specifically, you know, talking maybe in people's living rooms, right? At least at their doorstep, at their threshold. How are you experiencing people's conception and value of these things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they're very, you know, a lot of people that I talk to, very open of the Second Amendment in Arizona. The left has really lost that game. We should not sleep on it. We should not sleep on it at all. But I mean, we are the second most free gun state in the entire country. You know, more so than Texas. And people are like, no, that's not right. I'm like, yeah, it is true. Right. We, you know, I think Alaska is number one and we're number two. You know, and so I think that people are very accepting of the Second Amendment, which is a wonderful thing. You know, I think that the problem is that a lot of people, they don't understand the Bill of Rights. They don't read it because it's not taught. It's not taught anymore. The Constitution is not taught. They don't really teach you about what it is. I mean, you know, they're more focused on, you know, in the education system. When I was in, it was, you know, they're more focused on teaching you that the mighty Congress, the powerhouse of the South, right? you know, and now they're focused on teaching pronouns. You know, they're not focused on teaching, hey, these are your rights as, you know, as citizens of the United States. And obviously, that's a massive problem. And so we need to start teaching more of that, right? There needs to be more conservative organizations. Tyler Boyer says it best, right? He says, we need about 100 or 1,000 organizations doing what we're doing, right? Yes. We need organizations teaching the Constitution. We need more organizations that are helping out with ballot chasing. We need more organizations that are going to help out with political education. You know, we need more of these conservative organizations. The left has all of these different organizations to do this. And like, we really don't. And so like, that's what we need. I think that they're open to it. I think that they just have to understand it more. Right. I mean, you know, they know like the first two amendments, which is like freedom of speech, religion, and press. You know, and then they know like, you know, right to bear arms. They can't really tell you like quite what the rest are. And that's kind of a problem. You know, I mean that, you know, it's, so I think it comes down to really educating them more. And really talking to people about more of these are your rights as a citizen of the United States. And if we don't, then the government is just gonna, you know, continue. Some may argue continue to break the Constitution or start to. So that's, you know, that's kind of where we're at with that. You know, I can tell you, I practice the Second Amendment as much as I can. I can tell you, I mean, I have a competition this weekend. And so, you know, it's something that I really enjoy. I wish more people could enjoy and understand it, but you know,
well, leading by example is powerful, right?
Absolutely.
Well,
And you mentioned the Constitution, you know, that that they may start tearing our Constitution apart. They've been doing that since 1934. Absolutely. Our gun rights, I mean, if you look at it, our founding fathers would say that we've already been infringed way far.
For sure.
And so we do need to teach it. You know, I grew up, I think I graduated in 72, 73. And there wasn't a lot of talk about the Constitution and politics then. And I went to a pretty good school. So it happened before that, that it started slowly doing these other things. But I think, is there any countries that don't have a constitution like we have that allow all the shenanigans that are going on right now? They don't allow it. So these people that do want to change their sex or do want to do this, they should believe in our Constitution because it gives them the right to do what they want as long as it doesn't infringe on anybody else.
Right.
And you wouldn't be able to do that if we didn't have a Constitution.
That's exactly right. We have a good friend in the Second Amendment advocacy space. Her name is Gina Roberts. She is a trans woman. She was born male, transitioned to female in her like late 40s. And last summer, when all this craziness was going on about, you know, Target stores putting all their LGBTQ stuff and all of that, and the LGBTQ flag was just like, you know, this new provocative, you know, like, I dare you to say anything negative about it. She put up on her social media the American flag and said, this is my flag. This is my pride flag. Because if not for this flag, the rest of you couldn't have that pride flag. And so, you know, I think that really should be more valued, especially in any marginalized community, any minority community, to understand the power of this inheritance that we were given in this nation. And, you know, I like her example to have out there, to be able to show people that, you know, we do have ambassadors for our values and for our beliefs and for, you know, the things that we are trying to move into the next generation, and be good stewards of in even these, you know, other communities that you would think, you know, it is, you know, the Hatfields and the McCoys, we're never going to agree, we're never going to get along. And it's like, that is absolutely the biggest lie. And that serves the divisive people in the media and politics, because the media, they're like, well, you have to come to us to know what's happening, right? You can't talk to your neighbor because everything's offensive. And then the politicians, because they're like, well, you have to come to us to fix it, because, you know, clearly you and your neighbor can't ever have a civil conversation. And I don't believe that. I don't buy into that. And I do everything I can to be a bridge in the places that are really the non-traditional places. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that is a powerful thing.
So you're the bridge, and then the government's that big freight liner coming towards you, Cheryl.
They're trying. How about that thing with the whole bridge collapsing? Yeah. That was still... I clearly have my tinfoil hat on. It is fully on for that situation.
But Eric, you give me hope. I mean, when I see the younger generation that's out there fighting for our rights and fighting for the Constitution, you give me hope. And I've been to several events where the younger generation's taken over, you know, kind of doing this stuff. And
well, and I want to ask you, this is kind of a big assignment for a very short period of airtime we have left, but I wanted to know if there was something specific that you could challenge people of each generation, like maybe people in their 20s, what should they be doing in their 30s? What's a key thing they can do in their 40s, something in their 50s? So I'm 57 now. So I'm a grandma. So I'm already in that grandma stage. So, you know, when you look at 20s, people are kind of still in school and building their life. 30s, they're young parents. 40s, they're established in a career. And 50s, now we're grandparents. What are your thoughts about those?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. If you are in your 20s, like, I pray that if you don't have faith, you find it. Because the reality is we need more people of faith in this country. And it's not about Christian nationalism, it's not about any of that. You know, it's about having, you know, something to believe in. You know, one of the things that I'll say that really goes across everything is be a patriot. I mean, you have liberties in this country that people in Venezuela, in Cuba, you know, and a lot of other countries that don't have these freedoms and liberties that we do. But it's also important to understand that they're under attack. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's time to get active and it's time to get involved and it's time to understand and realize that. And so do your part, right? I mean, do your part. Vote, okay? I mean, if you're already voting, then, you know, get your neighbors to vote, right? Get the people in your street to vote. You know, but we really need people of faith. We really need, you know, something to believe in, right? In this country, it's so divided. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everything is divided. The Republican Party's divided. You know, I mean, everybody's a rhino now, you know, it doesn't matter how, you know, conservative you are or how much of a spine you have, you know, if you're establishment and you're a rhino, you know, the term is, in my opinion, been watered down, you know, but the reality is have something to believe in and fight for something, right? Yeah. Wake up every morning and look at yourself, you know, be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm doing my part as an American citizen, right? I'm doing my part as a person of faith, right? And so when we can do that, right, and you can feel accomplished, you feel a lot better. I mean, we are, you know, I mean, we are such a godless generation, you know, and we're also a very depressed generation, which is so sad. Yes. It's like, you know, look, there's a loving God out there who is willing to accept you, right? If you just believe in him, right? And if you accept his son who died on the cross so you could live the life that your flesh wants to live, right? And striving to be a better person that way, you know, and waking up every morning and realizing that. And I can tell you, I mean, I've had a lot of experiences in life. You know, I've been through the ringer in some, you know, scenarios before. And what I can tell you is that at the end of the day, the only thing that keeps me going is God. The only thing that keeps me going is Christ, you know, and being able to wake up every morning and saying that I'm not just doing this for me.
Yeah.
I'm doing this for the glory of God, right? I'm doing this for the country. I'm not just doing this for me because I want to. Frankly, if I was doing it for me, I probably never would have gotten politics, if I'm being honest with you, right? Like I said, it's a very love-hate relationship with me and politics.
Yes.
You know, and I think that a lot of people agree. But being able to wake up in the morning, looking at yourself in the mirror and thinking, I'm doing something great today.
Yeah.
Right. Or God is watching over me today, and knowing that you have that friend, right? And that father figure and that mentor, is something that I wish that all people had. It's something
And that transcends all of these generations, all of these decades that you know, I was kind of quizzing you about. That is true. I mean, there's people in their 40s, 50s, 80s who haven't, you know, found their faith yet, and that aren't enacting their patriotism, that haven't been voting and being, you know, a participant in this great nation. And so I love that. That transcends all of the ages. Where do you see you in 20 years? What are some of your big goals?
You know, so this is something I've thought a lot about, and kind of where I'm at. You know, I am looking to move to Idaho at some point, potentially. And, you know, it would be wonderful to have, you know, a show and be, you know, a commentator, a political commentator at some point. I mean, that would be absolutely amazing, you know, to kind of have somebody that has the knowledge and have somebody that has the experience, but also have somebody that, you know, is talking to everyday regular folks and understanding where they're coming from. You know, I would love to, you know, go back into kind of the podcasting and go back into, you know, a lot of that. If that doesn't work out, then, you know, I'll become a deputy. You know what I mean?
We're not going to allow you to move out to Idaho.
I understand we don't want to lose you.
Every person like you that leaves, we get three that don't care about the state come in. So you can't leave. Now you can do your podcast. You can do all the speaking, all that stuff, but you're going to stay in Arizona.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I am still going to, you know, have a big role in Arizona politics.
Okay.
But it's something that I'm still not giving up though, right? It's not like I'm leaving after this election. I'm going to give everything I can in this election. You know, we're going to get all those people out to vote. You know, we're going to turn around, we're going to win this thing. And then in 2026, we are going to take back the governorship. We're going to have a conservative governor and, you know, no more veto queen. And, you know, we're going to have somebody who's pro Second Amendment, pro family values, you know, as a governor. And then at that point, in my opinion, I did my job as a resident in Arizona. You know, I can still come back and travel around and help out. But, you know, something about being able to hunt and fish off the land, and, you know, being able to drive 45 minutes north and, you know, having seven ski resorts is very appealing to me. And, you know, my family's moving out there too. So, but, you know, it's something that I'm not going to give up on. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that I have been called to this. I feel that God has called me to this. Mm-hmm. I feel that he has, you know, has kind of forced me. I don't want to say forced me, but kind of forced me down this path, because I've tried to get out and mm-hmm. I just get thrown right back into the fire every single mm-hmm. time, where it's like, mm-hmm. nope, like you're staying in, you know? So, you know, Arizona will always have a special place in my heart, and, you know, but we're going to try everything that we can to save this place.
I love it. That's fantastic. Well, how can folks follow your journey and all that God has you doing?
Absolutely. So, you can Real Eric Hayes on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter. I still call it Twitter. Some people, you know, it's X now, but Twitter, you know, TikTok. I'm not really on TikTok, but I do have an account. It is Real Eric Hayes also. And then you can go to tpaction.com. That's our website. Coalitions.com. If you want to sign up for our coalitions, you want to learn more about it. If you're out in the West Valley, you'll probably be receiving a phone call from me. You know, so that's kind of where we're at. Real Eric Hayes on all platforms, and coalitions.com and tpaction.com. Those are the places to find me and more about what we're doing at Turning Point Action.
That's fantastic. And Turning Point Action is nationwide, right? So if they go to that website of the coalitions, did you say .org?
.com. Yeah.
Coalitions.com, that, you know, people that are listening all across the nation can dive in and be inspired by what we talked about today. Eric Hayes, thank you so much for all that you're doing and for giving this time to us today and to our audience. And we are just blessed to know you and are excited to watch your journey.
Thank you very much. Thank you guys. God bless.
Absolutely. Thank you. God bless. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Exciting to see mm-hmm. young people.
So true. We held an event here at our auction house, our studios in our auction house. And I don't even honestly remember what it was. It was probably one of our DC project, the teal sign behind me, now called Women for Gun Rights events. And Eric came and set up a table. He was tabling for Turning Point Action. And you know, sometimes people that come and set up tables, they're just kind of quiet and they sit in the back of the room and just kind of do their thing. But there was something about Eric that I just kept finding myself engaging him in conversation. And so that's kind of where our relationship, our friendship blossomed from. And, you know, again, I think it is that kind of that God connection. There's something that keeps bringing us it cross paths in a good way, you know, having our paths cross. So I'm excited to watch what he does with his life and his journey. And this brings us to the end of our show. That went so quickly. And, you know, before we wrap up, I wanted to tell folks about something that some good friends of ours are doing. They have created this product called, I don't know if that's showing, but it's called Locked In Grip. It's liquid shooting sports chalk. So our friends are the Hills of the Complete Combatant. And we need to have them back on the show, to be honest with you. But, you know, the idea of this Locked In Grip, especially in a state like Arizona, where it's April right now, but it is about to be like you're standing on the face of the sun.
Why did you have to remind me of that?
I know. And it's so hot outside. Even now it's starting to heat up. And so when you're out on the range and you've got that good, strong grip, and then you start getting, you know, sweaty palms, it happens, right? Because maybe it's humid outside, maybe it's hot outside where you live. If you have ever lost that perfect grip after shooting multiple rounds, or your hands do start to get sweaty, and the ability to hang on to your firearm, this Locked In Grip is a grip enhancer that keeps your hands free of moisture to create a slip free connection to the action of shooting your firearm.
Why didn't I know about that before? You know what I used to do? Mm-hmm. I quit shooting because of this.
How come?
Summertime, I'm out. I can't, the gun's sweaty, you know, everything. So I take my gun, put metal grips on it, set it in the sun.
Oh.
Then I put my hand on it and it fries into my hand. And then I can shoot.
Yeah.
It's super painful.
No, you don't want that.
I'm so glad there's a better way.
Yes, there is. And it is called Locked In Grip Liquid Shooting Sports Chalk. It is made for shooters by shooters. Go visit lockedingrip.com and get some for yourself and a friend, right?
My doctor's going to be glad.
Yeah, no doubt. Also, I want to remind folks about, you know, as it gets to be near the end of the show, that means it's snack time for us, right? So these delicious snacks are never too far away from us, especially in the studio where we work up an appetite. And I want to show you this bag, tell you how delicious these snacks are, and then invite you to join a private invitation-only shopping club that is helping my family, our family, and millions of other people cut the cord on the huge corporations that use our own money to diminish our freedom and individual liberties.
Wait, before you say the name of that, I would like to say something about that. You know, you're showing us delicious candies and the good stuff, and there's other products too, like shaving creams, things like that. But the thing you're missing out on is the steaks.
Oh, yes.
My gosh, we always go to the grocery store and pick through the steaks, try to find one good one. And, you know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. We get these steaks delivered to our house.
Absolutely.
I have never had a bad one, and I mean that with all my heart.
So true.
They're
River
so good.
River Bend Ranch Steaks is part of this opportunity, this invitation that I've given you. And as Dan said, from laundry soap to skincare to delicious snacks and steaks, you can shop online as you need items. Or what I like to do is kind of set and forget my monthly shopping list, all of which is delivered right to your front door. Just click through to patriothousehold.com/GFR for Gun Freedom Radio. You will be supporting American jobs on American soil, buying American-made products. It couldn't be any better than that. patriothousehold.com/GFR. Every order supports not only the work that we do, but also the Second Amendment Foundation that is out there fighting court cases all across the nation to protect all of our Second Amendment
rights. And if you
rights.
Order a steak and you don't like that steak, you did something wrong.
It's
no, but
true.
If you don't like the steak, I'd like to know. Because I keep thinking, okay, this is going to be good for a while. And they're so good.
They are amazing. Yeah. So anyway, thank you all. I want to thank Eric Hayes for being an amazing guest. Thank you to all of our awesome listeners all across the world, not even just the nation, but the world. Wherever there's internet, we have viewers and listeners, and we appreciate you. If you want to go back and watch any portion of this video or any of our videos, you can go to YouTube or GunStreamer or the smartphone app. And so you can also listen to the audio only version if you go to our website, gunfreedomradio.com, click the on demand tab and
binge listen to your heart's content, darling.
And if you want to see photos and bios and links to all of the works of all of the guests that we've ever had on, click the guest tab. And it is a growing body of information of subject matter experts. And when you spend time there, we don't hate that. All right. Until next time, we are going to
pray for our leaders, pray for our nation.
Absolutely.
Because we really, really need it right now. Absolutely. We've got an election coming up.
We do. And we need good people doing good work that focuses on protecting and defending our founding documents, our founding values.
So what do you do? So when you look at your ballot and you've got these people, you know, there's sites that you're going to go to find out what they do. But what we do is we look at all of them, and not necessarily what their party affiliation is. What we look for is, do they follow the Constitution?
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely. All right. And once we get done praying for our nation and our leaders, all of them, Dan?
All of them?
Mm-hmm. Even what, the ones you don't like?
Why do we have to go there?
How about especially the ones you don't like?
It's a big list.
It is a big list. It's growing list. You know how many
don't believe in the Constitution? Or they swore to the Constitution, but then go, ha, what's that?
I know.
That's my anti-like people.
I know. So we need to pray for them, that they find their way. All right. Until next time, have a good week. Be good to each other. And God bless.
Bye-bye.